So everyone grab a skein of yarn or something similar. What do they grab if they're a woodworker?
A piece of wood.
A piece of wood. Go get your wood, woodworker. Glass artists, please be very careful. Okay. Hello, makers. Welcome to the Making Conversation podcast, where we chat all about making, the app, and the act. I'm Jen, head of marketing for Making. My pronouns are she, her. My Making app username is Knit Pearl. One of our wonderful Making app community members is my guest today, and I'm super excited for you to meet her. Her name is Liza Laird, and her username on the Making app is Yoga of Yarn, and she has written a book with that name, Yoga of Yarn. The tagline is A Knitter's Guide to Self-Discovery. She's an author and a maker and a yoga teacher, mom to humans and a dog. The dog does seem to play an important role in some of the friendships and relationships that she has formed over the years and she talks about in the book, and also a cancer survivor. So just a heads up, we do touch on a little bit of her journey with breast cancer. But I'm really excited for you to hear her story and to talk about the book. So welcome, Liza. Thank you so much for joining me. I want to hear all about you and what your maker journey has been. And yeah, tell us everything.
Yeah, so I'm Liza Laird. My pronouns are she, her, and my making username is Yoga of Yarn, because my whole life is yoga and yarn. I was first taught to knit by my mom, and she taught me when I was 8 years old. And I just remember absolutely loving it. I still have the very weirdly shaped pink scarf somewhere that I first made.
The scarf thing that everyone makes. Yeah. I love it.
And I think I still have up there, like, one of the first hats I ever made is up there. It was like a little tassel hat. And so I absolutely have loved knitting for a very long time, and yoga. My mom was also who introduced me to yoga when I was about 11, I think. And I remember the first yoga class she took me to. At the end, there was a nice deep om, and she was so loud, and I was so embarrassed. And now, you know, over the years, we've changed gears, and I've embarrassed her at a million yoga classes.
I love that. Things that we look back at and we're just like, oh, mom, why are you like this? Or like, you know, they'll say something very profound and you're just like, nuh-uh. And now you get to flip the script.
Knitting is kind of my first love, but my mom also taught me how to crochet. So I can crochet. It's more of a thing that is added onto knitwear to finish edges and things. I haven't necessarily crocheted a full sweater or something yet. But I also love sewing. I remember sewing as a kid. One of my first skirts I ever sewed, my 6-year-old daughter now wears, because I think I was like 8 or 6 when I took my first sewing class and made, you know, a tiny little skirt. So she gets to wear that.
Cute.
I turned 40 last year, and my big 40th birthday present to myself was to learn to weave on a floor loom. And I got myself a floor loom, and now I just can't stop weaving.
But that's a great gift. The gift of, like, just adding to your list of how many crafts you know how to do.
Yeah.
I love that. So what all have you woven?
My desire was to make woven yoga blankets. So my big thing is I only have a 36-inch wide loom. So I do double cloth and weave it so that when it opens up, it's double width, so I could get like a yoga blanket size. So this was one of my first ones that I wove. I've got here. And I did my weaving lessons at Harrisville. And anything I do when it's yoga or knitting or weaving or all of my crafts, my whole family gets involved and comes on the trips with me. So when I went to Harrisville, everyone came with me, my husband, my 3 children, my mother, my father, and they all played all day in local towns while I went to weaving class. And
How
the same
fun.
Thing for my yoga and knitting retreats that I lead. Oftentimes my mom and one child will come along, and it turns into a whole family affair.
That's awesome. I love that. Keeping everyone involved. And have you embarrassed your daughter at all in any of this process?
Oh, constantly.
Perfect. We're just passing it down the line. So I have my book here with lots of notes and everything. Let's get into it. Because I think that we're going to kind of bounce around a little bit with your story and things that I found in the book that were awesome and such. But, you know, for so long, since I learned how to knit, which was, I don't even know how long ago, 15, over 15 years now. I lost count. I can't believe I lost count of how many years. You know what? The pandemic really did a number on what is time? What year is it? I don't know. Anyways, with the length that I have been a knitter, you know, a lot of that time was kind of like really interested in it. And then I would drop off for like a year and then I'd come back to it. And I think over the last several years, I really embraced it as something that brought me peace and calm. I have never been good at just like sitting and relaxing. And knitting for me was a way to like not only be doing something, but be relaxing at the same time so that it kind of scratched that itch. And then I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was 40, which was a year and a half ago. And it all made the most sense. Like, oh, that's why you can't sit still and why knitting is like such, like, it had become my meditation because also I couldn't sit and meditate. I tried so hard. I wanted that feeling of just like calm. Yeah. And then I realized, girl, you are meditating. Like, knitting is your meditation. Meditation doesn't have to be sitting down and doing one thing, or it doesn't have to look a certain way. You know, when I got the copy of this book, I was like super excited because of all of the different types of tools in this toolbox, right? Like, I kind of look at this as like a toolbox because breathing has become a big part of my toolbox and knitting is and all of that. I was very excited to go through this. And I will say, because of my ADHD, like sitting down and opening a physical book and reading it is like nearly impossible for me. So what I did was I was like, okay, universe, what do I need to know right now? Like, what do I need? And I would just open it up and read the pages. And if there was like an exercise or something, I would go through it. And so when I actually went to go read the opening, it was really awesome. So the foreword, let me scoot around like this. So the foreword is by Melanie Falick. Did I get that right?
Melanie Falick, yeah.
Falick, okay. And it says, what I may love most about this book is that you can open it to nearly any page and find a useful, accessible posture, perspective, or challenge. Or if you prefer, you can read it page by page, front to back. Liza's lessons make sense either way. And so as I was like, okay, I'm going to read the foreword, I'm going to read the opening. And I'm, you know, I've gone through a lot of the different pages and everything. And, you know, it kind of adjusting it in the way that I could. I was like, oh my God, that's how I did it. In the intro, you talk a little bit about what brought you to writing this book. And as we know, you know, your mom taught you how to knit when you were 8. The fact that you started meditation at the age of 11 and your yoga practice at 14, like, that blew my mind. I was like, at 11, I was like, I couldn't, well, probably now looking back on it, it was probably the ADHD, but I couldn't sit still. I was like, I had to always be doing something. So you said that your mom brought you into that space and taught you the benefits of all of it?
She totally brought me into it. And I also had a teacher. It was like Mr. Joel or something. I can't remember his name. But anyway, he would offer us meditation classes in the morning. So before school started, we would all go. And I remember it being freezing. And I guess it was the winter when it started. And we would like all sit and meditate before class. And I remember not necessarily enjoying it, but I was like, this is something that I'm introduced to. And I feel like it's something I kind of want to do. So let's just see what it is. But I don't think I would ever have really called myself a full-on meditator until now, later in life, when I understand the practice and how it doesn't have to be so rigid if you're not stuck to one, you know, dogma or a certain way of doing it. I really believe in the freedom of finding the peace in whatever way that you can. And I really love your story of how you approached the book and opened it up, because that's exactly what it is. Like, there's not one way to do it. There's not a right way or a wrong way. It's just kind of like, there's a ton of information in this book. You can kind of just pick and choose and see what's helpful. And just talking about the introduction, I wanted to set the stage for why I had written this book. And I think the introduction originally was much lengthier and much wordier, because I feel like there's so much that went into this book for me. But what I think really was the biggest turning point for me was when I turned 31, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I remember so distinctly, I was like, this is my golden year. You know, the year, because it's the year when your birthday number meets your like age number. So my birthday is May 31st. And so I turned 31 on May 31st. And I was like really banging excited all year. And then later in November of 2014, I personally found a lump in my right breast. And that really knocked me sideways.
Yeah.
But yoga and knitting saved me. When going through cancer treatment, I struggled a lot emotionally with, I was just a crying mess. And I found that what I would do is my chemotherapy days, I would call them camp days instead. Because at the time I like would want to vomit when I said the word chemotherapy. And so I would call them camp days, and they were my craft camp days. And I would bring my knitting project of the time with me. Or if I just like didn't even have the energy to knit, I would do very gentle yoga in the chair. And when I say very gentle, I mean like tilt my head side to side, and that's still yoga, or take a deep breath. And what shifted dramatically for me during that time was how much I had to slow down, because I had like no energy. But once I accepted the slow motion movement of my life, I found ways to have joy and fun. And I practiced a lot of gratitude. My daily gratitude, I had a wall of daily gratitudes that I looked at when I needed a reminder. And I mean, I had an amazing supportive husband. He was an absolute rock star, and I can't even begin to offer how much love and gratitude I have for him for that. But he, throughout our relationship, not only was my like cancer doctor, he's not a doctor, but he was my support and my person who I went to for everything.
Yeah.
And then, you know, going through childbirth with him, because post-cancer, I was able to have three kids. He was my doula, and I got him a shirt that says, I'm the doula. So he's he's my solid rock and support that helped me through all that. And total, you know, cheerleader for me doing absolutely everything knitting and yoga related.
I think that when we go through anything that's really difficult, and I mean, I'm going to say I've personally never been through something that is like that, but Ashley sent out an email today that was talking about feeling all types of emotions and it being okay, and anger is one of them, right? Like, I can't imagine how angry that you probably felt sometimes, like, why is this happening to me, etc. Is there something that like helped you get through that and get to the gratitude, or was it just, you know, you didn't even allow that to kind of come in to play at all?
I'm always somebody to let myself feel all of the emotions. My emotions are at the surface at all times. And I remember distinctly somebody asking me, do you ever wonder why this happened?
Mm.
And I remember my response, which is no. I don't wonder why. I only know that I'm going to make it through. I don't know why I know that, but I do. Mm-hmm. And it was that attitude and that perspective that allowed me to kind of move forward and have gratitude moments. And when I say like I did great daily gratitude, like maybe 1 minute was grateful. The other however many minutes there are in a day was me like a crying mess on the floor. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
But there were days when, you know, I found joy and I had fun for many hours, but then there were days when I was really sad. But I let myself feel the good, the bad, the ugly, the everything. But for some reason, I didn't concern myself with why it happened. It was more what's happening next and I'm going to make it moving forward.
Yeah. I think that that's such a like lovely way to allow yourself to feel all of the feelings, right? And not like bat anything away or shove anything down, but also focus on the hope part too. at some point in the intro, you had talked about working in marketing at a large fragrance company, which we will not name names. We named names in the last podcast, not now. Yeah. And you eventually quit to become a full-time yoga teacher. And I think that, you know, as society, we have really kind of collectively started peeling back the onion of capitalism and how much that, like, it has actually, like, planned our lives almost, you know, like, growing up, I very much felt as a woman, I need to go to college, get married, have babies. Nobody told me that. Like, that's what society has, like, taught me to do, right? I feel like more people are wanting to, like, not allow that type of thing to take over their decisions and want to do things that make them happy. So do you have any advice for somebody who's maybe looking to get out of the 9-to-5 and focus on something that really truly makes them happy? I also want to hear, was it like one moment that pushed you to quit? Like, was it like, I just can't do this anymore, this one thing happened? Or was it like a buildup over time?
It was kind of a buildup over time, but I also distinctly remember one major shift that happened. Okay, two major shifts that happened. One was, I have my best friend who was my roommate in college and roommate in New York City when we first moved there, called me and was like, hey, Liza, did you happen to be walking down 59th Street crying around like 4 p.m. today? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, that was me hysterically crying as I walked myself to the subway. And she's like, yeah, my uncle was driving by and saw you. And I was like, okay, well, clearly, like,
out of everyone in New York City.
Yeah, I know. I was like, clearly I can't keep it together, so let's move on. But then also at that period in my life, I think it was about 2009, two very important people in my life passed away. I remember just as my uncle was passing, he had said something along the lines of like, life's too short. Don't waste your life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I also was 23 at the time, so I just was more willing to take that risk and take that big leap of faith and jump. And I did.
Nice.
And I'm really glad I did.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for people who maybe want to take that leap as well?
I mean, it's a lot of personal faith. And I think that planning needs to happen in advance. Like if I did it now, later in life, I would have gotten a little bit more ducks in a row and planned a little bit more. But I think having unwavering faith in yourself, and even on days when it feels like nothing is going right, to just either have a piece of paper or somebody or something that will help you remember why you made this decision to stay on track. Because there will be really, really high moments and there will be really, really low moments. And it's staying committed to your choice when you hit those low moments, that is going to be the hardest part.
Tell us about Ragline Knits. How did that come about? And tell us everything.
When I left my corporate job, I became a yoga instructor full time and was leading yoga retreats and knitting and yoga retreats by myself as Liza Laird. And then in about 2014, right around when I got diagnosed with cancer, I happened to be living in Boston. I moved out of New York City, moved to Boston, and met a new friend, Kate Madden. Kate, I found out, liked yoga and knitting. And I was like, you're my best friend now. Don't want to be. You're my best friend now.
And you don't have a choice. Yes. You
do not have a choice. And, you know, I had gone over to her house to knit and brought my dog, because at the time I was only a dog mom. And she, you know, my dog, the she in the story, went and peed on her carpet and just marked her spot. It was like, I'm your friend too. So Kate and I decided, okay, this is fun. We both love yoga and knitting. Let's start a knitting and yoga business together. And we were driving to Webb's, because Boston's like an hour and a half from the Webb's yarn store in Northampton, Massachusetts. And as I'm driving along, she's taking notes as we're like brainstorming our business. And we were trying to come up with a tagline, but she accidentally auto-corrected to Ragline. And that is how the name Ragline Knits came about. She now actually lives in Texas and I live in the Catskills in New York. So we do everything remotely together. But We come together once a year for the yoga and yarn retreats. We also have knitting patterns and things, but our real passion is the knitting and yoga retreats because, well, now from the first time I started them, it's about 15 years. So we've done about more than 15, but at least in Vermont, the one where the original retreat, we've done about 15 of them. And like the same people come almost every year. It's like a half and half, half new people, half the same people. And we've created such a community. And I love these women. And it's just so much fun to practice yoga with them, to knit with them. And sometimes there's people who bring crochet, needlework, and or weaving or other things. It's not just knitting, but it's really just like a really warm, cozy, big hug and loving community that's been created. But I love it so much. So
when is the next retreat and how can people sign up?
So the next retreat is actually not until November this year, 2024. And it's sold out.
Oh, wow.
3 days.
So sorry.
So sorry. It's not happening. But I am actually planning, I might expand to a Catskills location. I'm talking to a place right now. And the Vermont retreat, because it does sell out, I'm looking to do maybe twice a year. So if you go to yogaofyarn.com or raglineknits.com, either one, because I manage both newsletters, you can sign up and find out when those retreats will come on. I'm very bad at posting on Instagram, so don't look there. Go to the website and sign up for the newsletter if you want to find out about retreats.
Cool. So you started Ragline Knits. When did this idea of writing this book come about? How did that start and when did it happen?
I was looking back at emails and my first pages started in 2009, but a lot of life happened, a lot of things changed, and I'm actually really grateful that I let it take that long because more life happened. I had more experiences. I think that it's much richer because of the experiences I had from, you know, being a yoga teacher in New York City to living in Boston. I've had a stint living in LA. I had cancer in there. I've had 3 kids. I now have alpacas and chickens and a giant angora bunny. So there's just so much more that has gone into it.
Did you approach a publisher? Did somebody reach out to you?
I took a unique approach and decided that I was going to do this independently from the start and not approach a publisher. I mean, I think back in 2009, yes, I was going to approach a publisher. But a few years ago, when I got more serious about actually saying that I wanted to put this book out into the world, I decided I wanted to go independently because I wanted to have more control over where the book was sold so that I could say, like, we're not putting it on Amazon. We're only going to sell it wholesale to local yarn shops or sell it directly from our website. And that way we can, you know, support local shops and be able to have, you know, kind of like a pricing thing. Like I've been looking at books a lot on Amazon and it like hurts my heart to see how low they price out these books. And there's absolutely no way that a local shop or a bookstore is going to be able to compete with that. So I wanted to be able to create something that was not only a handbook and a tool guide for people, but and a beautiful object, but something that might also help support some local businesses. So because I have complete control over the distribution, I can wholesale and it's not available on Amazon. In the future, if a big publisher does want it, you know, maybe I'll be open to that. But for right now, I've learned I'm quite controlling. I get to know pretty much almost all the people who are carrying the book. Like, you know, Harrisville Designs, they have the book because I've spent time at their shop taking the weaving classes. They've gotten to know me. They now support the book. The local yarn shops here in the Catskills all carry it. And a few like local bookstores and things like that. And then across the country, I've made phone calls. You know, I've been blessed enough to pre-COVID traveled quite a bit and been to quite a few yarn shops, and I'll call them up and we'll have a conversation and get to know each other. And you know, now they carry Yoga of Yarn. It's more about community building than it is about getting high sales. It's a message that I find is niche, and that I really want the people who are interested in it to get it. it doesn't need to be a New York Times bestseller, because I, even though I think it would benefit everybody, it's not for everybody. So it's a niche thing, and I'm doing niche marketing for it.
That's great. With the Making app, that's why we've kind of gone the way of like bootstrapping instead of taking funding, VC funding right now. And so like, as you're telling this, so as you're talking through this, I'm like, huh? Yeah. Yeah. I get that. Cause you know, we want to be able to stay true to our values. And if somebody came in and was like, here's a ton of money, you know, we would have to make sure that they understood that. So totally get that. And I love that that's the way that you went with it and that it's working.
But it reminds me of what you asked me before with if somebody wanted to abandon their corporate job and, you know, take the leap, what do you recommend? And like that commitment and that faith in yourself is really important, like I said. And for this, like it's happened where there are slow days where I don't sell any books and I'm like, oh my God, what the hell was I thinking? Mm-hmm. And I mean, like I've said, I have a very supportive husband. So luckily, like, he usually can remind me of why I'm doing what I'm doing if I'm having a down moment. But I have those down moments, and I do sometimes wish I had the publisher behind me to support me. But at the same time, you know, I made this decision for reasons, and I'm really glad I'm sticking to them. But there are hard moments.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's when you're doing something completely different than what, and I'm not saying that other people haven't self-published, but like focusing on, you know, we're trying to build an app and a marketplace based on values and not based on profit, right? Doing things differently will always be uncomfortable at some points, you know? I'm glad that you have that reminder that it's okay to be doing something differently. If it's going to align with your values, if it's going to benefit the audience and the part of your community that you want to focus on. So that's wonderful. Okay. I want to pull up. So one of the, let me move my coffee because the Italian in me comes out and I talk with my hands and, you know, all right. So one of the pages that I opened to, it was actually yesterday, was about the beginner's mind. Can you explain what the beginner's mind is for people who may not know that phrase?
A short description of the beginner's mind is approaching things with curiosity and free of judgment, which I think is really challenging. I know that when I have been learning new things, I have to consciously remind myself to shut that judgmental part of myself down and not assume I know what's happening next or what I'm going to be knowing how to do, and really try to be open and curious rather than kind of predicting what is going to happen or knowing how to do it. What comes with that is also trying to avoid, you know, the frustration phase when you don't get something the first time. And when we approach in this more open and curious and conscious way, we hopefully can release ourselves of judgment, kind of remove procrastination and things like that. But it's not an easy path necessarily. Yeah. And I'll say that for a lot of the things in this book, even if I talk about them or say them with a smile and have fun with them, I think it's just because I really like that challenging approach to life.
I've received a lot of comments on TikTok specifically like, oh, I wish I knew how to knit a sweater. And I think that, you know, that fear of messing up at some point does, you know, it lessens, right? As you are, as you're knitting more and more. But I think that adopting this, even as people who have been knitting for a long time, is super important because everybody messes up. I mean, like, I was sitting with Amy in Barcelona, Amy, and she was like, oh, I accidentally did a yarn over here. I've got to go back. And like, it was like nothing, right? Like, she's just like, whatever, I messed up. But there's so many people out in the world that would hear like, oh, Amy messed up? What? Like, of course, we all do. Like, but that's a really good way to learn. And I talk about that a lot. I just wanted to bring this up because I was like, This, I needed this. I needed this because there's a project that I really want to pick up soon. And I've been just not avoiding it, but like going for other things first because I'm like, I just need something that I can just sit and just like, you know, knit around and around and around. And those projects are great. And I love having those. And I always have one on the needles. But yeah, I love that.
That's why I'm a huge proponent of like multiple projects at a time, because I feel like depending on your mood, you need a certain project for that. But it is always good to have something that can challenge you and which you can approach with that beginner's mind that gives you that little bit of hesitation and fear simply so that you learn and you grow from that. Because without that, we don't learn and we don't grow.
What was your approach in bringing the yoga and the knitting together in some of these meditations and movements?
It's so funny when I have a question like that come to me because I'm like, it's so obvious. Like, it's to me, like when I'm knitting, I'm usually like sitting in a yoga pose or I automatically put my knitting down and stretch or do a breathing practice. And it just all interacts and flows very naturally because for me, to knit and to practice yoga are a lifestyle, but it was very hard for me to pick the few exercises that I put in here. And I shouldn't use the word few because there's about 55, I think.
I'm gonna say, it's not a few. There's a lot and I like it, but I wouldn't say few is the right word for that.
Because like, I honestly like keep thinking of new ones and I'm like, oh, I should have included that. But hopefully maybe there's another book in my future. How I approached it was I basically lived each of these practices and did them. And then if it felt right and natural to me, I would include it in the book. And I also used experiences that I had from my yoga retreats or yoga and knitting retreats or from I have some private clients as well that I teach yoga for knitters to. And their experiences kind of have fed into this, things that I've learned from them that helped them find greater ease or intention setting or working with projects and things like that.
If somebody hasn't done yoga before and they're a little scared to like pick up this book, what would you say to those people?
I would say that this is the perfect book for you because some of the yoga is as simple as shaking your hands like this. This is the yoga for the person who's never done yoga before. There are some things, maybe like a chair sun salutation that might seem intimidating because that's a little bit more movement. But like we talked about in the beginning, like this book is all about picking and choosing what works for you. And there are over 55 practices in there and 4 knitting patterns. So you could skip all the bigger yoga movements and do the simple hand movements because it's supposed to be approachable and accessible. It's not about doing a headstand and knitting, although that is a party trick I can show at some point.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, now we're going to need a video of that so that I can insert it right here in the podcast episode. Proof. We need the proof. All right. Lately, we have talked a lot about like craft equality, right? And how like somewhere along the line, like knitting and crochet kind of got separated and the equality of how people saw them. And I know that you are a knitter first and foremost. But if somebody is watching this and hears the tagline for the book and is like, do you have a message for any other fiber artists besides knitters and why they would want to check out the book?
The book is applicable to all crafts. Any of the things, you just take the word knitter out and insert in your craft of choice. Me, as personally being more of a knitter, felt like I wouldn't be able to stand behind my words if I put another word in because I can't design a crochet pattern. I admire those people who can, but I definitely can't. you know, but I spin, I weave, I sew, I crochet, I knit, I do all the things. So I think it all applies. I apologize for not having the term being on the cover that it's for all makers, but you know, from my personal writer as an author and credibility, I'm a knitter.
I don't think that you need to apologize. I think that you said it exactly the way that it needed to. For this to feel true to you, you can make a knit pattern. You can't do a crochet pattern. And even though you can crochet, it is not your primary craft. So yeah, I don't think you need to apologize, but like, it's good to talk about that stuff, because the more you talk about it, the less uncomfortable it is, the more people think about it when they're, you know, out in the world.
I have to say that, like, the reason it took me so long to start weaving was because of the, like, craft inequality and the interpretation I got from the fellow knitters I know who judged weavers and were, like, would stick their nose up to a weaver. So for years, goodness. I was like, oh, I guess I don't want to be a weaver. But then finally at 40, I was like, screw this. I'm doing what I want.
Yeah. Stop putting your nose in the air, people, at other crafting is meant to, like, spread love and joy, and sometimes it's very the opposite of that when, you know, it can be difficult, but that's the basis of it. And so when I hear people who judge other, I'm just like, what? Yeah. Why?
I know. Makes no sense to me.
Yeah. So I will say that if somebody is judging you for your craft, I'm going to say that that's something that they need to work through and it has nothing to do with you.
I've learned that now.
But people need therapy, okay?
Yes.
Please talk to your therapist about why you're judging other crafts. That's I just don't understand it. One of the things that you talk about is stash status is one of the pages that I opened to. And talking about how, I like this. First, we should ask ourselves if we have attained SABLE status, SABLE. And SABLE means stash acquired beyond life expectancy. How many people do you know that have gotten to SABLE, and about what age did they get there?
I don't know what age they achieved it, but I do know quite a few people who have hit SABLE status. But, you know, it's also like, collecting yarn is a art form in itself. You know, some people just absolutely love collecting yarn and might not necessarily knit all of it. The idea is more to just take a look at and see what you want to live with and what you want in your life and your perspective. I'm a person who, the second I get my yarn, I want to use it and play with it and explore with it. So I have a nice stash, but not a SABLE status stash, simply because I just, especially now with weaving, I'm using it up because it's just sitting there to be used in my mind. Yeah,
with all of the fiber festivals that making has been at, it's really hard to not buy yarn when you're at a fiber festival, especially when you're like meeting these people who have like put so much love into the yarn that they make. And it's just like, okay, I want to buy from all of you. But I'm definitely somebody who, like, I need to have a pattern to go with what I buy. Talk about the patterns that you chose to put in here.
So that was another reason I ended up going independent published rather than traditional publishing, because traditional publishing would probably want at least 25 patterns or more in the book. And I wanted just 4 simple patterns, because it's more a book about approaching your knitting with a yogic philosophy, like learning intention setting, contentment, breath work, movements, things like that, than it is just another knitting pattern book. But the knitting patterns that I did put in the book are tied to a meditation or a breath work or something like that. So there's a mala cowl that's learning to color brioche in the round, but it's learning it in a mindful, meditative way. And using the stitches. So there's 108 stitches in the pattern, and that's how many stitches are in a mala necklace for meditation. So some people, when they meditate, they sit and they have the mala bead in their hand, counting each bead, and 108's one turn. So you could just knit 108 stitches one day, and that would be your meditation for the day. So that's one of the patterns. The other patterns is a bolster, like a pillow. And then once completed, you can use it for yoga practice or sit with it in knitting to help support your back. Another pattern is an eye pillow. So you can knit a color work eye pillow. You can use your breath work as you're knitting this little item up. But then when you're done, you have a finished object that you can do your restorative yoga with. Oftentimes on the yoga and knitting retreats, the afternoon yoga is basically laying on the floor supported with lots of pillows and an eye pillow.
That's my favorite yoga, by the way.
I think it's the best.
Cozy, yeah.
Yeah. And then the last pattern is a meditation mat or a yoga mat. So you could knit a full yoga mat size, but it's like really thick and squishy, and it's brioche and garter stitch. So it's not too boring and it's interesting at the same time. And at the end, you have something that you can sit and meditate with or lay on the floor with.
It's all very intentional. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So during the last podcast episode, we talked about pricing with a few of our making besties. And, you know, we talked about a lot of different ways of making money within our maker industry. There was a little tea spilled about do not do this or do not accept this. So do you have advice for anyone that might also want to explore writing a book? And do you have like do's or don'ts about like how to get started?
I would say find a support team. I would not have been able to create something as in-depth and I think clear and cohesive if I didn't have Melanie Falick, who wrote the foreword, working with me. She was also my developmental editor. And she's been in the publishing and craft industry for over 25 years and has wrote Making a Life, which I highly recommend if you're not familiar with that book. It's absolutely amazing. Having somebody who has been there before, who was able to not only give me edit guidance, but also kind of like bigger picture stuff was really helpful. And then, you know, if you make the decision to go independently publishing, make sure you have somebody who can design the layout of the book. Laura McFadden did the layout of the book for me. She is a longtime yoga and yarn retreat attendee and a great friend of mine. And she, like, it was amazing. I told her the idea for the book. And she sent me the cover and that was it. Like we did the cover and the layout. She got it in like 2 seconds. Like she understood it and it created like the perfect layout. And the illustrator, I found a great illustrator. So I think that no matter if you go traditional or non-traditional publishing, finding a team to support you as you go, because no man is an island. Writing a book it's like giving birth. It is intense process and having support team is important. And like a friend who you can reach out to. My roommate in college who I mentioned to, her uncle had seen me crying on the road. You know, I every once in a while would just email her a few pages. She's not a knitter, but she's a yogi. And just she'd kind of give me feedback. And it's that support that helps along the way.
What is your favorite part of the book? I know it's hard. It's like picking a favorite child probably, but yeah.
Of this book?
Yeah, of your book. What's your favorite part of your book? Is that...
I don't know.
Is that on a list of like, do not ever ask this question to an author that I didn't see or something?
I have no idea. I honestly don't think I've ever... Yeah, it is like asking me which is my favorite child. I don't I can tell you what my favorite illustration is off the top. Let's see if I can find it. Okay. This one. It's what the page? Knitter's Eightfold Path on page 71.
Yes, I saw this and I was, the colors are so great too.
I think the part of the book that makes me laugh that I like a lot is when I talk about how you can knit anytime, anywhere, like make sure you always have your knitting with you, your project of choice. And my first recommendation is that underwear is overrated. And I can't tell you how many times I have traveled, well, pre-COVID, but where I have totally brought like 6 projects and no underwear. But it was not intentional, but it is more important for me to pack the yarn.
Is there anything that you want to lead us in?
Do you happen to have any yarn nearby?
Do I have yarn nearby? What color should we?
Ooh, that like terracotta colors. Oh, is it orangey terracotta?
Yeah, this is. We've got a little wandering flock action happening here. Yeah. This is going to be. Yeah, this is one of the next projects. This is actually part of the project that I'm a little bit nervous to start. But now I have to because I've told you all about it. Okay, anyways.
Well, you know, whatever's going to instigate it, right? Here, let me grab a skein. 1 second. I think I have something. Well, Mine's a little bit more orangey, but
nice. Ooh, love, love, love.
All right.
Okay. So everyone grab a skein of yarn or something similar, I would assume, if you are, I don't know, what do they grab if they're a woodworker?
A piece of wood.
A piece of wood. Go get your wood, woodworker. Glass artists, please be very careful. Okay.
Yes, exactly. Because we are going to close our eyes. So.
Yes. Okay.
Put some gloves on or something. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So you're going to hold your item. So actually, we did something like this on the yoga and yarn retreat. And I said, bring your preferred object or favorite object that you purchased today, because we had done excursions and outings. And one person brought a bottle of wine. So it's totally does not have to be yarn. It could be.
Can I hold both? Because I like them a lot. Both of them. Yeah. Hold on. Let me go get. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Okay. We'll stick with this just for ease and time. It's fine.
Yes. If it's comfortable to hold your object, whatever it may be, yarn, wine, or piece of wood, with both hands, you can. If for some reason you're working with an injury, just place the item in your lap and let your arms rest to the side. Okay. So be conscious of where your body is today. My arms are going to be raised simply for a moment to demonstrate the holding, but you can place your object.
Bring my arms down. It felt weird.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. If it feels weird, don't do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing I always say about any of my knitting patterns or meditations or yoga classes is these are all just suggestions. You do not have to listen to everything I say. If I say turn right and you want to turn left, go ahead. There is a reason for that. And it's just about learning to be aware of those things. It's more witnessing yourself than it is following the directions. Okay, so we're going to close our eyes and take a deep inhale. And if for some reason closing your eyes just lights up your mind and sets things off the charts, you'll have a soft gaze on your object in front of you. Okay, so the eyes are just almost half open, right? And let's just begin by taking a deep inhale and exhale out through the nose. And so you're in through the nose, out through nose. In through the nose one more time. And out the nose. Okay. And then just continuing your breathing however you naturally breathe. Don't worry too much about it. But roll your shoulders a little bit and notice if you're tightening them at all and try to release the shoulders. Maybe wiggle from side to side. Unclench your jaw.
Sorry. I was like, wow. I was like, my jaw's actually clenched. I'm so sorry. I just ruined this for everyone. Okay. Sorry, everyone. Okay.
You did not ruin it. This is all part of the experience. Okay.
Okay.
But now I can't stop smiling and laughing either. Okay. So. All right.
Restart. What did they say? Mulligan? Okay. Is that the
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Okay. All right. So you're breathing, your jaw's unclenched, and you're holding your beautiful object. Take a moment to breathe in and breathe out. And then ask yourself just to notice the texture of the item in your hands. So you can even let go of a little bit, feel it a little bit. Just kind of see if you can notice the weight of it and the texture of it. And then we're going to take a deep inhale and smell our item. Especially if it's yarn or wood, it might have a particular scent. And I just want you to breathe that in for a moment. And then if the object's not already in your lap, just place the item down in your lap and take both hands up onto your chest. So you're going to place one hand right on the center of your chest and then the other hand directly on top of it. Bow your chin in towards your chest. Take another deep inhale. Exhale. And then ask yourself what it is that you need to make or possibly do with this item. If it's knitting, knit it. If it's wine, maybe drink it. If it's wood, what object does it want to be made into? And then just gently release your hands down. If your eyes are closed, crack them open and lift on up. So that was a short little exercise of engaging two of our senses, our touch and our smell. I feel like we don't necessarily always at a yarn shop take a big whiff of our yarn. But I have to say that I'm really into the smell of yarn now and have such a happy feeling with certain smells. Like, this is actually Harrisville yarn, and because I had such a pleasant experience learning my weaving there, I recently was weaving with cotton, which didn't have much smell, and it was kind of like a bleh yarn in my mind. Mm-hmm. And then what's that smell like? What does it make you think of?
Sheep.
I don't know. I just think
maybe it's suggestive too. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yes,
it can kind of activate your creativity by igniting multiple senses rather than just touch and sight. And that's why I had you close your eyes. So you don't necessarily look and see what you're seeing, but you can feel it in your body.
Nice. All right. So if y'all see people smelling yarn at yarn shops now, please, no judgment. We're all in this together, okay?
Yes.
Thank you for doing that. That was awesome. Sorry to everyone who was like having a moment and then I start laughing.
I have to say that there needs to be more laughter when doing things like that or in yoga classes. Like, it doesn't have to be serious. Like, it needs.
That's true.
There needs to be a joy and a lightness to it, because sometimes that's what helps us release.
Let's talk about what we found in the Making app that was inspiring or interesting this week. What do you got?
So I have never heard of a book blanket, but Bad Hamish is doing a book blanket.
Okay. And well, we both said the same thing. So
really?
I mean, but that, how cool is it though? So,
it's
okay.
So
yes.
Cool.
Okay. Bad and Hamish is BADHAMISH on the Making app. Y'all go look. It's amazing.
It is. The colors are on point with the book cover, and it's just such a cool concept, and I just can't wait to watch it unfold.
Basically, just like every book that they read, they made a granny square that had the same colors as the book. Another thing that I took note of that I just thought was so bright and fun and happy, this maker's name is Emma. On the Making app is Emma Knapton, KNAPTON. And they are into embroidering very bright and fun things. Richard the Rainbow Raptor. And it is the most bright and fun thing. The 3D-ness of it all and everything. As a podcast, we are multi-craftual. And as an app, we're multi-craftual. We do have a lot of fiber arts discussions and everything. But I do love the fact that you can open up the app and just see so many different kinds of crafts and creativity and just the inspiration that it draws.
That's why I love this app. Like, I find it so inspiring. I love being able to see all the other crafts and things that like other people can achieve. It's amazing. And it doesn't make me feel bad about myself like Instagram does. Yeah. This is like a beautiful and inspiring, happy space.
As we do on every episode, we're going to end with a moment of gratitude. So what are you grateful for?
I am grateful for the opportunity to talk to you. This has been very
fun. Yeah, it's been so fun. I am grateful for the opportunity to head out to New York next week. So we're going to be at the Brooklyn General Store and Lobby NME booth at Vogue Knitting Live. And then we also are having an event at Brooklyn General Store the Monday after that weekend. I'm just really excited to meet more makers and, I don't know, spend time. There's a few people that I met at Barcelona Knits that are going to be at Vogue Knitting Live. And so it's going to be fun to run into them and just, running into all the friends that are scattered around the world. So I'm very grateful for that. And again, I just end up talking about how I'm grateful for the community that is around us. And so it's the same every time. And I am grateful that you sat down and talked with me about this book and your life and your experiences and, I don't know, remind everyone where they can find you.
If you go to yogaofyarn.com or raglinedits.com, you can order the book and I will ship it out to you straight away. It's available at most local yarn shops, but if your local yarn shop doesn't carry it, let them know they can wholesale order it from me. On the Making app, I am Yoga of Yarn. I do have a TikTok, Yoga of Yarn, but I barely remember to put it up there. And then, you know, Instagram the handle is Ragline Knits. And to get updated on retreats, just sign up for the newsletter on either website. And the November retreat is sold out, but I'm planning another one in the Catskills and then another Vermont retreat. So things are happening.
Thank you again. Thanks everyone for watching and or listening. And we'll see you in the Making app.